and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Pamela Warshon-Smith, and we're going to talk about her book, What You Must Know About Women's Hormones. How are you, Dr. Smith?
Good evening.
Thanks for coming on again. You're always such a pleasure to have. It's like being able to pick the brain of an encyclopedia. minerals and hormones, or supplements and hormones, anyway. So before we get started, take just a minute and tell people who you are and where they can find you and where they can purchase this book if they want to.
Well, I'm Dr. Pamela Smith. I'm the director of the Master's Program in Metabolic and Nutritional Medicine at the University of South Florida College of Medicine. You can reach me on my website, which is cfhll.com. That's cfhll.com. And tonight we'll be discussing a couple of things from two different books that I've written. One is What You Must Know About Women's Hormones, and the other one is What You Must Know About Vitamins, Minerals, Herbs, and More.
And it's a fabulous book. I've interviewed you before on that book, and I loved it. It's like a Bible to me, and to my daughter, by the way, who's a teenager. She takes it to school and lectures to her friends about it.
Well, I'm glad you both enjoyed it.
So, do you have anything that you want to talk about first, or shall I just start asking my questions?
Go right ahead.
Okay. I've had, you know, since I've interviewed you before, I tried to do some different questions this time because I do have a teenager, and she's a female. A lot of her friends, I've talked to them, and they have some questions that I wanted to ask you. So I'm going to start off with a tough one for some people, and that's abortion. There have been, you know, a lot of these girls that they're so sexually active nowadays that's had abortions, and I thought, well, what should these girls be doing afterwards to protect themselves or to supplement their body and bring it back to where it needs to be and replenish anything that's gone now or to nurture their uterus that's just been violated? So I wondered what you had to say about that.
Well, we certainly know that B vitamins, all of them, B complex, are very, very important for the uterus and cervical health. And so a good multivitamin along with a good B complex is really important for every woman of every age, because we all want to have good uterine and cervical health, but particularly women who have had some sort of procedure to that area of their body.
So is there, what can they do to, you know, a lot of people that have those kind of procedures, it inhibits them from being able to have a baby when they get older. Does it help that too?
Well, if there is a procedure like an abortion, properly done, in most cases does not stop someone from having a child later on. If there's repeated abortions, however, that is the issue. Because if someone's consistently used abortion as a method of birth control, then the cervix becomes what we call incompetent, and it doesn't hold on to the baby and people miscarriage. Usually that does not happen after just one abortion, however.
Okay. What about if this, let's just say, we know how many people are estrogen dominant nowadays. Should they go back on, like my daughter, I give her a homeopathic progesterone. Is that good for girls to do that, or should they not do that after abortions, or does it even matter?
Well, after abortion, it may not matter. It really does depend on whether the person is estrogen dominant, and that should be evaluated by a saliva test by a metabolic specialist. And the reason for that is progesterone is a wonderful hormone, and it helps women not have anxiety, irritability, insomnia, mood swings, depression. Helps with all of those things. But if you have more progesterone than you need, then it can make your blood sugar climb. So it's really important to have these hormone levels measured, and salivary testing or a 24-hour urine are much better than measuring by blood, because blood only tells us a single moment in time, and it only tells us what is going on in the blood and not what's going on in the rest of the body.
Interesting. So what are symptoms if you already have too much progesterone? How would you know if your blood sugar levels were going up?
Well, the only way to know if your blood sugar level is going up is to literally have the levels of progesterone measured, and to go ahead and have the levels of your blood sugar measured. Both would be the perfect answer to those questions. There are some symptoms that can occur, though, if women have too much progesterone beside blood sugar going up. One of those symptoms would be weight gain, particularly around the back. The area becomes thick if a woman has too much progesterone. She can also get laxity of some of her abdominal muscles, and that will cause her back pain. That's a common symptom of progesterone going up, and it's part of the reason that that occurs even in pregnancy, because there's a lot of progesterone in pregnancy and not as much estrogen to balance during that time.
Oh, that just answered another question I have. Because I had that salivary testing done a while back, and the doctor said that I needed progesterone, so I started taking. But lately, I've started getting back pain. It's almost like I have menstrual syndromes, even though I don't have periods anymore. So that's probably an indication I don't need as much anymore. Do you get to a point where you don't need as much?
As we age, we typically need less hormones. Also, incontinence or a leaky bladder is commonly a symptom of excess progesterone, carb cravings, increase in appetite, and it even lowers growth hormone, the hormone that keeps us young.
Oh, wow, that's interesting to know. Because what if you have estrogen dominant, or too, has that probably gone? Because I have all of those symptoms you just talked about.
But
I had estrogen dominance, and that's why I went on it.
Well, if you had estrogen dominance, it's important we go back and remeasure. For example, myself. Before I stopped cycling, I was estrogen dominant, but at menopause, estrogen goes down, and so most women eventually are no longer estrogen dominant, so they need less progesterone for balance.
That's interesting. I'm so glad to know that, because it's been driving me crazy trying to figure out what that problem is, but that's probably what is. I'm 50, so I'm probably starting to go through that change and don't need it, right?
Don't need as much.
Interesting. Okay. All right. The next question I had was HPV and cervical problems. My daughter has so many friends with HPV now. So what do you have to say about that?
HPV certainly is a virus that is associated with the number one reason that women end up getting either cervical dysplasia, which is abnormal pap smears, or cancer of the cervix itself. There's over 100 different forms of HPV. Some of them are harmful to the body, some are not. Some lead to genital warts, other ones can lead to cancer or dysplasia. There are ways that people can lower their risk to HPV. For one thing, there is a vaccine out there for women, but probably the more practical approach would just be to use a condom during intercourse and not to have multiple sexual partners.
Are there supplements to help support your body's need to fight that off, or ability to fight that off?
Yes. There's a very important supplement called lycopene.
Mm-hmm.
For everyone out there, it's lycopene, and this is a kind of vitamin A. It's a very strong antioxidant, and in some people it can actually help resolve HPV infections.
Really? What kind of dosage do you use?
The dosage that they're looking at is 10 milligrams a day, although it's certainly in dietary sources like tomatoes, tomato products, tomato sauce, and things of that nature.
Interesting. Now, I had another question here that I had personally had never heard of it until this young girl asked me about it, and she said, and she was quite embarrassed, she said, I have hair on my breast. And what could, she said, I'm so embarrassed. What do I do about that?
Well, hair on the breast can be removed. if it's something that disturbs someone, although sometimes it's cultural, and other times it's because women may have higher testosterone than they normally do, and that's called polycystic ovarian syndrome, where women have higher testosterone in relationship to their female hormones.
So what do they do about that?
Well, polycystic ovarian is very important that the diagnosis is made. And again, the number one way to make a diagnosis is high testosterone, either by blood, saliva, or urine. And if women are found to have PCOS or polycystic ovarian when they're younger, we know it increases their risk of infertility. We also know that they start to get weight gain. And as women age, if testosterone is too high, then it increases a woman's risk of obesity, diabetes, and heart disease. So there's a lot of different signs and symptoms of PCOS, from high blood pressure to the hair you were talking about, to weight gain, to skin tags, even depression, blood sugar climbing. The cause is not totally known. We do know there is a hereditary component where there's a gene called follistatin, and that gene is linked with insulin. And if women happen to have inherited that gene, they do have a higher risk for polycystic ovarian disease. We do know there's many different ways to treat it, from exercise to fiber to stress reduction to weight control to antioxidants like lipoic acid, CoQ10, vitamins A, C, E. Birth control pills have been used to treat it. So have things like progesterone itself.
Okay. Are there any supplements that they need? I mean, how do they balance out that testosterone? Because I like to find natural sources. So would there be supplements that she could use?
Most of the supplements that are involved are doing two things. One is saw palmetto. That's a supplement that most people think is just used by men, but it's not. Women can use it to lower testosterone, 240 to 260 milligrams twice a day. And then we typically also use nutrients like chromium, magnesium, and alpha-lipoic acid to help get a handle on the blood sugar.
So that must mean that they must be at risk for diabetes.
They are at risk for diabetes.
At risk for diabetes later or now?
Risk for diabetes later, right now, either insulin resistance or early weight gain, just depending on the age of the woman.
Okay. All right. What about, I'd like for you to talk a little bit about estrogen. Is it estriol and estradiol? Or how do you say estriol? How do you say that?
Estriol, that's exactly how you say it.
Can you talk about that? Because that's an important thing, I think.
Oh, there is. There's three estrogens that women make. And by the way, men make these estrogens too. But for women, E1 estrogen is the one that we usually don't replace later on as women go through menopause, because this is the one that's linked to breast cancer. And as women age, they tend to make more E1 estrogen. The E2 estrogen is the 400 functions that estrogen has in the body for women.
And which one is that? Is it estriol or estradiol?
That's estradiol, di for two. It comes from the Latin derivation. And then estriol, E-S-T-R-I-O-L, tri for three, is the one that most scientists believe helps prevent breast cancer in women. Experimentally, it's being used to treat breast cancer. Not experimentally, estriol is used in women to treat MS.
I didn't know that either. Interesting. So if you have estrogen dominance, do you also need to supplement for estradiol?
If you have estrogen dominance, the women usually do not need estrogen. They need instead progesterone for balance.
Okay. Polycystic acne. I'd like for you to talk about that, and does the same apply for males and females? Because this question actually came from a male. Little boy had the worst polycystic acne I have ever seen, and he was going to take that new drug they have on TV that has all those side effects with the liver and the colon. So I was wondering if there's something he can do, or do you know?
Well, for cystic acne, if it's a testosterone issue for women, lowering testosterone does help that. When it comes to acne otherwise, in both men and women, clearing up the gut is really, really important. Having good gut health so that people don't have yeast overgrowth, they don't have constipation, diarrhea, reflux, or any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Very important to clear up the gut. There is a small amount of dietary changes that can help with acne in some people. We do know that a lot of sugar is very hard on the skin.
Okay. What about genetically modified foods and, you know, corns and flours and things like that? Does that play a role, or do you know?
So far, no one's really been able to connect together acne with genetically modified foods, but a lot of the studies now are showing that genetically modified foods may not be our best choices for many things, but some big studies are going on now, and I think there's more to come on that subject.
Do you know where those studies are, who, where we could see them? Because I'm interested in reading them.
You know, I'm just starting to look at some of the newest research that's out after I've read a couple of books myself on genetically modified foods. So I've just been getting online and using a search engine and seeing what I find.
Have you read that book, what's that guy's name, Jeffrey something, another Russian roulette? Or
yes, I have read that.
Genetic roulette.
Genetic roulette's a great, interesting book.
It is, isn't it? It really is. Okay. I noticed in your book that you said people who have endometriosis or endometrial cancer, one of the risk factors is a history of abuse.
Yes.
What kind of abuse? Emotional abuse, physical abuse?
It's most commonly sexual abuse.
And why is that?
We don't know why that is. There are some people who surmise or theorize that it may be due to the fact that when people are abused, there is a very intense psychological component that causes cortisol, their stress hormone, not to function very well, and this compromises the immune system. But so far, that's a theory. We hope they look at researching that more.
Well, are there other cancers or other diseases that you have found a correlation with particular kinds of abuse?
The biggest correlation that we have found with abuse is adrenal fatigue. That's where the body only makes enough cortisol to keep it alive. The body has to have cortisol or you die in 7 days. And cortisol, again, is the stress hormone. But what happens is when you're really, really stressed, everything in your body will come together to try and really help that cortisol survive. And at some point, you just are almost totally flatlined. And unfortunately, people who've had a history of long-term abuse tend to be there. The good news is there's a lot to offer now for people with adrenal fatigue.
Okay. Tell us about it.
Well, first of all, the gold standard for adrenal fatigue measurement is to do a salivary test. And that's 8 in the morning, 12 noon, 4 p.m., and midnight. And it's not just a swab, you literally spit into a tube. And that's how we determine. And adrenal fatigue would be, all 4 points of that would be, of the cortisol would be flatline.
What do you do to support it?
Well, we do know that B vitamins, calcium, copper, magnesium, manganese, selenium, sodium, vitamin C, zinc, our friends, the omega-3 fatty acids, and kind of a long word, phosphatidylserine, which people can call PS, which increases acetylcholine, our main neurotransmitter of memory.
Is that what you can get? I don't mean to interrupt you, but I forget. Is that what you get from lecithin?
That is what you get from lecithin.
Okay.
All of those things help support adrenal function.
And how would you... trying to think here. how would you know? Do you just take all of those across the board to support it?
You would want to see a metabolic functional anti-aging specialist to literally have this measured, because not only do we start you on some of the nutrients we just looked at, but we also start you on what's called adaptogenic herbs, meaning things like ginseng, ashwagandha, or adrenal extracts, meaning extracts from the adrenal gland itself.
That's coming from a pig?
It can come from a pig or a cow. It's purified. It's very, very safe. It's been used for many, 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 many years. And then, of course, stress reduction techniques are key. Prayer, meditation, tai chi, yoga, qigong, exercise, massage, breathing techniques. It's really important that people look at not overbooking themselves. And when people have a traumatic history, such as sexual abuse, then it takes a long time for it to heal, but it is many times repairable.
All right, let's talk a minute about minerals and nutrients. I have a physician friend who says, never take calcium. Nobody needs any calcium. So I'm just talking about myself right now. So I listened to him, and I didn't take any calcium, but I use a lot of transdermal magnesium. And I noticed I started having these really bad headaches. And something intuitively said, take some calcium. So when I take calcium, I take vitamin D with it. But he says, there have been studies where the only reason sea turtles ever die is because they calcify. So is there really such a thing as a calcium deficiency, or is there a problem with absorbing the calcium in the right place because you don't have enough D or magnesium or potassium? Does that make sense?
It does. And there was a recent trial that came out that I think really misled people, that basically said people that intake calcium have an increase in heart disease. What the trial really should have said was people who have excess calcium intake end up with a problem with an increase in heart disease, because they can get calcium plaquing of the heart vessels. We also know too much calcium can cause kidney stones. Too much calcium can make the thyroid, the body regulator, not work well. So too much is not a good thing. Of course, we want people to get most of their calcium through foods, and it's not just dairy, broccoli, almonds. I mean, many things have calcium in them. But what we like to do to know if people need calcium is to measure. In fact, in our practice, what we do is measure 30 vitamins in the body, because the vitamins play off of each other, like you just mentioned, magnesium and vitamin D. And that way we don't measure calcium just by itself. We measure 30 different nutrients.
What lab do you use to do your testing?
There's two ways of doing that. You can measure the 30 nutrients. SpectraCell does a very good job of that. Or you can use Metametrics, Genova, H-Diagnostics, and you can look at the actual pathways of amino acids, fatty acids, organic acids. And then when you look at the pathways, if they're not working right, it will tell you what vitamins you need.
How do you look at the pathways? Is that one of those particular labs? I've interviewed SpectraCell, so I know about what they do, but is there another lab that does it differently to show you the pathways, or is that something you just know as a physician?
No. Those labs, Metametrics, Genova, H-Diagnostic, actually literally measure the pathways. They have either combination tests, or they can be done separately by blood and or urine, where they measure the amino acids, those are building blocks for proteins, fatty acids, omega-3s, 6s and 9s, etc., and something called organic acids. And we see if the pathways are working. If they're not, we know which vitamins make which pathways work, and we can go back and find out which nutrients the person needs.
That's interesting. I didn't know the labs were different like that.
They do. They're called functional medicine laboratories.
Okay. So what if you have two, this is another learning experience from my personal life. I was using a lot of transdermal magnesium because I was magnesium depleted. You know, in transdermal you get a lot more.
You do.
And I started getting a lot of shoulder pain, knots, and neck knots. Is that because, and this is just something I wonder, is that because my muscles get so relaxed that they kind of knot up? Because when I take the calcium and I start getting that, it gets better. Does that make any sense?
It gets better when you take the calcium, then you're right. Calcium kind of excites things, magnesium relaxes them, and they have to balance each other.
So is that what's happening? It's knotting up?
That's certainly a possibility, absolutely.
Wow, okay. I never thought about, nobody's ever told me that. Okay, so let's talk about thyroid hormones a little bit. How do you know if you have a low thyroid?
Well, measuring thyroid is best done by the blood, and it's very important that we measure all the thyroid labs and not do what's commonly done where we only look at one or two. So there should be something measured called TSH, which is thyroid stimulating hormone. There should be something measured called free T3, free T4, reverse T3, and then we should see if the person has thyroid antibodies. That means the body's producing antibodies to its own thyroid gland.
I'm interviewing Dennis Wilson in a couple of weeks about Wilson syndrome. What do you think about that?
Well, there's certainly some interesting studies done by Dr. Wilson and other people looking at the very important aspect of T3. When the body makes thyroid, it makes T1, T2, and T3. We don't know very much about T1 and T2, but we do know that T3 is very important for memory, prevention of heart disease, lowering cholesterol, keeping our weight where we want it to be. So it's important to know what T3 is, and conventionally in medicine is not usually measured by primary care physicians.
What about T4?
T4 is conventionally measured. That should still be measured as well, because when the body makes thyroid, it goes through two pathways, the T3 and the T4.
Okay. So are there symptoms that you might have to indicate that you should see someone about this?
There are many, many symptoms of thyroid loss, from agitation to allergies, anxiety, heart racing, or heart not being a normal rhythm, brittle nails, fatigue, carpal tunnel syndrome, cold hands and feet, dry hair, dull facial expression, even endometriosis, gallstones, high cholesterol, high insulin, inability to sleep, low blood pressure, muscle cramps, PMS, sleep apnea, vitamin B12 deficiency, missing the last one-third of your eyebrow, no hair on the outside of your leg, which also can be a symptom of adrenal issues, to many, many more.
Is that because it's the hormone director?
It is the hormone director, and yes, of all the things I can think of, having low thyroid function has more symptoms probably than anything else.
And how do you treat low thyroid?
Low thyroid we measure. And so most commonly patients need both T3 and T4, and so we replace both of those by either giving something called Armour Thyroid, which is a combination of T4 and T3, not quite as available in the United States as it has been in the past. And if we can't get that, then we have a compounding pharmacy make T3 and T4 for us.
Do you use any natural supplements to do it?
You can use natural supplements depending on the cause of the problem. For example, if patients are deficient in iodine, we can give iodine. And sometimes we don't need to give thyroid medicine. Giving iodine will pick things up. People can be deficient in iodine for a lot of reasons, from eating foods that interfere with iodine like cabbage, cauliflower, and soy, to medications like inhalers for asthma. The sugar substitute Splenda, sometimes there's an increase in iodine deficiency, and even in people who use fluoride a lot, iodinized salt, people who have diet high in pastas and breads can be iodine deficient.
Must it be taken by mouth, or can you literally put it on your skin?
You can put it on your skin, although conventionally in medicine, it has usually been done by mouth, either as Lugol solution, which is a liquid, or Iodorol, or other companies make something similar to Iodorol, which is a combination of T3, T4 as a pill.
And what's it called?
One is called Iodorol. Other companies make things, Designs for Health, example, makes it's just called T3 plus T4.
Because I tried Iodorol one time, and I know I have low thyroid, but it made my blood pressure go so high I started having nosebleeds. So I think that it has potassium iodide in it. Is that right?
It does, but you may not have needed the iodine.
Okay.
You may be one of these people who had thyroid who was not functioning well, but you were not low in iodine.
Okay. Now, you mentioned earlier, and I can't remember what we were talking about, think about maybe the hair on the breast thing. You mentioned sodium. What kind of sodium?
Sodium
is actually... I know table salt's not good.
Well, it depends. Some people do need table salt. We talked about people with adrenal fatigue.
Uh-huh.
People with adrenal fatigue tend to have low sodium, and they actually benefit from even table salt. So, you know, moderation is the key to health. Too much table salt is a problem for people with their blood pressure. We want table salt to be purified. But, again, it depends on what we're looking at. With adrenal fatigue, people need a little bit of extra salt.
Is it better to use sea salts or table salt?
Well, sea salts, by and large, don't contain iodine.
Okay.
So you would need, if you're low in iodine, you would still need to supplement the iodine.
Okay. Let's see, what else did I want to ask you about? Depression. What can you talk to us about depression and hormones?
Well, one of the very main reasons...
Severe depression. There's a lot of these
severe
kids.
Depression, even. Not just depression, but severe depression is if their thyroid's not working well. And so almost always in medicine, we measure your thyroid function before we give you an antidepressant. Certainly if people are suicidal, then they need to go to the emergency room right away, and we look at all of those kind of issues with immediate treatment with medication. But then there's also hormonal dysfunctions that can occur. For example, women with premenstrual dysphoric disorders, severe depression, postpartum depression, PMS, perimenopause and menopause, all of those are depression associated with low progesterone. In women, low testosterone can cause depression. In men, low testosterone can cause depression. So there can definitely be hormonal issues, even if your gut is not healthy. Earlier we mentioned that it was really important to clear up your gut. People should not have reflux, IBS, etc. Well, what a lot of people don't know is that 90% of serotonin, the happy neurotransmitter, is made in the gut. So the gut has to be healthy to even make serotonin.
Yeah, I'm interviewing a man pretty soon, Michael Gershon, who wrote something about the gut being the second brain, and that
that's a great
we produce
book.
More serotonin in our gut than we do in our brain. So if your gut's not healthy, you're not going to have the serotonin you need or be able to uptake it. Is that the right word?
Yes. It's an excellent book, by the way.
I'm excited about interviewing him because nobody knows that. Everybody laughs when you say you have serotonin in your gut.
Oh, 90% of it's made there, 5% in the brain, and 5% in the platelets of the blood cells and in the retina of the eyes.
So what about yeast, candida? Everybody's filled up with that. What do we do about it?
It does seem like everybody has yeast or candida all the way up and down the GI tract. And people don't have to have, men don't have to have jock itch, and women don't have to have vaginal yeast infections for them to have yeast. For example, there was a study done showing that 98% of people with chronic sinusitis had it because they have yeast. Yeast can cause a lot of symptoms, even fatigue, and that's best treated for 2 months with a traditional prescription antifungal agent. And if people are really, really yeast filled for a long time, then different herbs that help with yeast, treat them for at least a year, and then permanent probiotics, meaning good bacteria.
So something like nystatin,
something like nystatin or diflucan.
Okay.
Would be commonly used.
Because I noticed, I have a little boy that's 10, and I noticed that there's this white stuff on his pillow every morning when he wakes up, and I know that's what it is.
Well, kids commonly have yeast nowadays.
Why is that?
Overuse antibiotics.
We haven't had antibiotics, so why would we?
Oh, good for you.
We don't do that.
So that's a good thing. Eating any kind of processed food or high sugar diet can cause it. It's hard to control what our kids eat once they leave the home.
Okay. Let's see. What else did I want to talk about? Inflammation. Just overall inflammation in the body. Does that have a connection with hormones?
Inflammation has a connection with everything because 90% of chronic disease is inflammatory in nature. 90.
So this disease does not present this month or next month. It's been presenting for the last couple of years, and suddenly one day it gets to a head like a pimple, right?
Exactly. For example, cystic acne, that we mentioned that's inflammatory. Endometriosis is inflammatory.
So what do you do for endometriosis? Because almost every one of these little girls that come, well, they're not little girls, they're teenagers that come to my house, I say, how are your periods? They all flood. They all have clotting. They all have very bad cramps. But their parents, you know, they don't believe that there's something that can be, they think it's normal. So what do you tell them to do?
Well, when people have endometriosis, they commonly do have pain. And endometriosis, just so that everybody knows what it is a disorder of the female reproductive tract where cells that form the lining of the uterus actually grow outside the uterus. So they can grow in the abdomen, pelvis, they can even grow in the eyes. And women can cycle and have bleeding into the eyes every month the same way they have bleeding into the uterus.
Really?
It's very interesting, and that's part of what causes the pain because it causes inflammation and irritation. Also, we know there is something that's increased called aromatase activity. Aromatase is an enzyme, and it increases the conversion of androgens, things like testosterone in women, to estrogens. And this conversion, when it's increased, can be related to endometriosis. So there are nutrients we can give. There are supplements that we can give help with aromatase conversion.
Like what?
Well, first of all, what we want to do is decrease risk factors for endometriosis. So risk factors are things like a diet low in fruits and green vegetables, being estrogen dominant, eating too much red meat can be a risk factor, having a high-fat diet. So altering how we eat certainly will help with the risk factors. There may be some environmental risk factors as well, such as PCBs. There's research right now going on with that. But when it comes to literally treating it, we do know that alpha-lipoic acid, we mentioned that one before.
Mm-hmm. I just went and bought some of that right before this radio show.
That's been shown to be helpful. B vitamins, vitamin A, particularly beta-carnotene, omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids, and something called pycnogenol, which is a nutrient.
What was it again? I've never heard of that.
Pycnogenol.
And is it, how do you get it?
Pycnogenol is most commonly taken as a pill. And
is that a health food store? Is it a pharmaceutical?
It is from the health food store.
Okay.
30 milligrams twice a day.
Okay. What about autonomic nervous system disorders?
For example?
You know, anxiety attacks. Mitral valve prolapse syndrome. Dysautonomia, things like that. I've never known anybody to know what to do about those kinds of things. I've not found anybody.
Well, anxiety is an interesting subject. If we're looking at anxiety in women, Very commonly, progesterone loss is a reason for anxiety, but we also look at neurotransmitters. We can measure neurotransmitters, epinephrine, norepinephrine, serotonin, dopamine, PEA, GABA. All of those are measurable, and the pathways that make them are measurable as well. We can go back and fix those pathways with nutrients. So that's a huge issue for anxiety. And also another big one is the adrenals. Women can have mind chatter. They can have all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
If the adrenals are not fixed, and a really good nutrient for mind chatter is theanine. I love theanine.
C-N-E-N as in Nancy?
T-H-E-A-N-I-N-E.
I'm going to start over. I'm going to type this out so I can.
Okay,
going to
type this out. Okay. T-H-E-A-N.
Oh, theanine.
Theanine.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Really?
Oh, theanine. Yes, it's great for mind chatter. But it has to be taken twice a day for that.
And what kind of dosage?
200 to 400 milligrams twice a day.
And what does it do? Because I've never heard that. Nobody's ever told me that.
It actually helps with anxiety, and it decreases mind chatter, literally.
How do you know how? It stops
it
the
affects
tape
the neurotransmitters.
Recorder? Which ones?
Most likely dopamine.
Very interesting. So would that have a role in addiction, too?
It probably does have a role in addiction, and there's some major studies that are being finished this year and next on addictive medicine.
Where?
Actually several different locations. One that is big right now coming out is the use of glutamine for alcoholism. We know that 3 grams a day of glutamine is very helpful to treat alcoholics.
Really? I'm typing this down so I won't forget, because I know people. And nobody's ever told me. Nobody knows a lot about supplements. There are very few of you. Some people know a very narrow focus, but you seem to know across the board. It's such a pleasure to be able to ask all these questions.
Oh, you're a great interviewer, so it makes it very nice.
Thank you. So would that help with other addictions, too?
We don't know. They're
would it help with things like these? There are teenagers cutting themselves nowadays. Does it help with that?
Probably not. That's more of an issue that is psychiatric, and then it may be related to neurotransmitters and depression, et cetera. But when people cut themselves or hurt themselves, the first person they should see is a psychiatrist.
So when you take the theamine, does it need a cofactor? Will it get out of balance? Does it have a polar opposite that you need to make sure is balanced too?
Great question. Not one that we know of.
Interesting. Because most of them you do, you know, you take one, then the others get all out of whack.
Exactly. Anybody knows of so far.
Where are we missing it in our diet?
Well, it comes most commonly in green tea.
Oh, so we're just not getting it in our diet at all, because in our everyday diet.
No,
we're not
most people
green
don't.
Tea. Okay. Interesting. Anything else interesting like that you know?
Well, certainly if you don't sleep, you can have anxiety. And sleep medicine, looking at sleep apnea, and just plain old sleep hygiene, where people don't sleep at least 6.5 hours a day, if you do that long enough, you'll also have anxiety.
So what do you recommend to help sleep?
Magnesium glycinate. Wonderful for sleeping.
Glycinate. So why would that be better than, like, the transdermal magnesium? Do you absorb it? I mean, because I thought magnesium didn't get absorbed till way down at the bottom of the colon.
Magnesium glycinate, for some people, tends to be better absorbed. And used orally, it does tend to help with sleeping. And that may be because it hits the GABA receptors better.
Oh, okay. Okay. So does it have anything to do with supporting, you know, the transdermal helps DHEA. Does it help DHEA or not?
Probably not directly.
Okay. And let's talk about DHEA since it's the mother hormone. Do you recommend supplementing DHEA?
We always measure DHEA because in both men and women it makes estrogen and testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want people to have DHEA if they're not deficient, because it literally increases their risk disease, particularly cancer, if they don't need it. People who do need DHEA, and certainly when people are stressed, they may. But as we age, we make less DHEA, and most people by the age of 60 certainly need it.
So let me ask you another question. I'm just looking at the notes I have here. My little boy has nosebleeds, and if I can get him to take his vitamin C capsule every day, we don't have nosebleeds. I mean, this will be something two or three times a day. But if we do that, if I find him under the couch and in the toilet and, you know, under the sheets because he doesn't like to take the pill. But I know when he misses it because it bleeds. Why is that?
Well, we do know that vitamin C helps with clotting.
Okay. Because I know a lot of kids have that, so I'm sure parents would like to know what they can do to help that. Anything else about vitamin C?
Oh, gosh, you could talk forever on vitamin C.
I know, I love that one. That was one of my favorites.
But DHEA, when we were talking about that, really is a very important nutrient because it lowers cholesterol. It helps the body deal with stress. It helps with allergic reactions and preventing them. It lowers triglycerides, the fat content in the body. It promotes a really good sense of well-being. It helps the immune system. So it really is a very, very important hormone. So it is important to replace it if it's deficient.
So let's go back to talk about GABA for a minute. I interviewed Gottfried Kellerman at Neurosciences one time, and he was discussing whether or not GABA crosses, it, oral supplementation of GABA crosses the blood-brain barrier. Do you know? What's your opinion on that?
I don't think we still know the answer to that. I read both things in the literature, so it's pretty variable whether it does or does not.
Do we see any results when we supplement GABA? Do you?
Some people say they do. Some people say they do not. Certainly Billy Shaley at the Pain and Stress Center has had some excellent results in San Antonio, Texas. So some of the providers have found some excellent results.
Okay. What about high blood pressure? What can you tell me about that? Just high blood pressure that you just can't get.
Well, when someone can't fix their blood pressure, again, in metabolic medicine, we want to know the cause of the problem. Why do they have an issue? What we now know that's directly related to blood pressure with many people is their fasting insulin levels. So we have to go back and see what's going on with fasting insulin and fasting blood sugar many times to help with high blood pressure. There's a great book out by Dr. Mark Houston called What You Must Know, What Your Doctor Never Told You About High Blood Pressure or Hypertension. Excellent book, and looks at all the different nutrients in the body that are very, very helpful. One of my favorite to help with high blood pressure is hawthorn berry. It's been found to work very well. Many other things like coenzyme Q10, taurine, many studies now on vitamin D, helping lower blood pressure.
Well, let me ask you a question here. I take taurine for this purpose, but why does if you're getting reflux with taurine, what is that telling you?
If you're getting reflux with taurine, either one, the company making the taurine does not have as good a supplement, meaning pharmaceutical grade, or your gut's not healthy.
Ooh. Gut's such an important thing.
Oh, my goodness, it's hugely important.
Okay, we have about 3 minutes left. You can talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Well, people always have a lot of questions now on resveratrol because it was on 60 Minutes and some other newscast. And resveratrol is really very interesting. It decreases platelet stickiness. It inhibits what we call COX-2 enzymes that can relieve inflammation. So it's an anti-inflammatory, it's an antioxidant. Some studies have shown that it decreases cancer risk. It makes us live longer, studies have shown. The big issue is the dosage. And for some of the things I discussed, 20 to 40 milligrams a day is fine. But the studies in living longer, it does take 250 to 300 milligrams a day.
Now, is that the stuff found in red grapes?
It is the stuff found in red grapes and red wine.
So will you get that from taking grapeseed extract, or is that something different?
Grapeseed extract is slightly different.
And what does that do?
Grapeseed extract?
Mm-hmm.
Grapeseed extract is a very strong antioxidant, as are many of the things that we suggest to people. I like to sort of explain that when people are having some issues with oxidation and inflammation, it's like rust on a car.
Good analogy.
We don't want their body rusting on the inside or on the outside. The most common of these that you would probably look at would be OPCs. OPCs or oligometric proanthocyanidins, that's why we call them OPCs, like grapeseed, pine bark, red wine, they all fall under that class, are really, really good immune builders and anti-inflammatories.
That's interesting. Okay, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just thought about that. Go ahead with whatever, back to your resveratrol if you want to.
Oh,
sorry.
No, that was fine. That was really my point I wanted to make, that if people are looking at it for increase in life expectancy, then they need to take a much bigger dose than what they think.
Okay. So if you were going to give somebody a typical regimen, and we only have a couple more minutes, would you recommend them to take a very good plant-based vitamin mineral supplement that has everything in it, and then add to them some very good antioxidants? Or what do you recommend?
Okay, everyone needs to take a multivitamin. It's not just because they don't eat well. If they own a cell phone, sit under fluorescent lights, fly in an airplane, sit in front of a computer screen, blow dry their hair, microwave their food, there's free radical production created, so they do need antioxidants. And antioxidants commonly are in a good multivitamin. But to add to that, everybody does need probiotics, good bacteria, and everybody really does need EPA, DHA, omega-3 fatty acids.
Okay. Since we have a couple of minutes, I'm going to interject here and ask two questions about those two things. One, does the multivitamin matter? Does it need to be plant-based? Two, the fish oils, especially now with the oil out there, because it's everywhere, you know, and the fish are eating it. Does it matter where you get your fish oil, the quality of it?
It does hugely matter, the quality of the fish oil, because otherwise it can have mercury in it, and it would be defeating the purpose of taking the fish oil. So it does matter if it's pharmaceutical grade, meaning that it gets into the body, does what it's supposed to do, and guaranteed not to have mercury. If people burp it up, then they can put their fish oil tablets or capsules inside the freezer and take it frozen. And it certainly does not hurt how it works. And your other question was?
Plant-based multivitamins.
For certainly vegetarians, of course, they want theirs to be plant-based. Does everyone have to have everything plant-based? Certainly as much as possible is good, but it's not always practical.
Okay. So what about krill oil? Is that better than regular fish oil or not? Because I've started noticing that appear on the shelves more.
Krill oil is a very good omega-3 fatty acid. Whether it's actually better than all omega-3s, other varieties like fish oil, probably most of the studies suggest that it is, but does everybody need the slightly extra expense of the krill oil? For most people that are really healthy, they may not need krill oil. Certainly people that have fibromyalgia, people that have heart disease, people that have high cholesterol, people that have a major illness, for them, taking krill oil, it may be worth the slightly extra cost.
Okay. 2 minutes. What about soy? I had moved my family from dairy milk because of it comes from a different animal, you know. I just have a problem of feeding my family milk from a different animal. So I moved them to soy, but then earlier you were talking about soy-based products causing some problems with hormones. Should I stop that?
Well, we do know that a lot of soy in the diet can affect the thyroid.
Come on, I just want to let you know. Nobody can hear me. Just keep going.
We do know that there can be an issue with the thyroid if you have a lot of soy. It's really important that the soy be of really good quality. Asian soy is very good.
Okay.
According to Dr. Kayla Daniels, some of the soy in the United States may not be processed as well. So it's another moderation thing.
Okay. Well, we got to go. My producer interjected silently and told me we need to hang up. So I'm going to have you back. So I could pick your brain for hours and hours and hours if you'll come back.
Oh, I would love to. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you and good night.
Good night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health. Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health.
Consciousness and health.
Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Harris.